Welcome back in, everyone, to a fabulous new Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We are joined by one of our favorite actresses today, and she is here to talk to us about a brilliant piece of theater we got to see last week. It was absolutely amazing. Joining us today, we have the actress April Mathis, who is currently in Manhattan Theater Club's presentation of Mary Jane. It's playing now through June 15th at the Samuel J. Friedman Theater, and you can get your tickets and more information by visiting telecharge.com. As I mentioned, we had the immense privilege of getting to take in this brilliant show, this really just heartbreaking, to be honest, show, but very emotional and very optimistic at the same time. And I'm doing a terrible job of explaining this piece, so let's go ahead and bring in the better person to do this. April, welcome into Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is truly an immense honor. As I mentioned in our intro, we are huge fans of yours. And this play in particular, the number of hats that you wore in this show was so phenomenal. And it's just, the show is so gripping. It's nothing that I thought it was going to be. So could we start perhaps by having you tell us a little bit about what Mary Jane is about?
Yeah, Mary Jane centers on a single mom who is caring for a toddler with a lot of medical needs. And it's the constellation of caregivers and friends and neighbors and sometimes strangers that she encounters in her journey of taking care of this kid with these needs. And basically, you see her deal with the medical healthcare system, facing people's assumptions, advice, often unsolicited. Sometimes she gives advice, and navigating the kind of emotional roller coaster that comes with what happens when your kid needs a lot of care.
Yes. That is, I completely forgot to mention the whole navigating the medical system, because in the scene where she's going over everything for the mom who's also going this, the new mom, I was like, oh my gosh, I wish there was a handbook, because yeah, that's a whole other play in and of itself, you know?
And there's no handbook, you know, it's kind of making it up as you go along. And, you know, that's why she's this kind of indomitable spirit. And, you know, you see how she, you know, navigates this with humor and, you know, kindness and humility and still being a human being too, not just being like this stock character that doesn't feel anything. She's definitely feeling everything that's happening, and also taking in like the little like microaggressions that come from well-meaning people in these conversations who, you know, sometimes say the wrong thing or, you know, are not very sensitive. And, you know, what you see is just kind of, there's no bad guys in this play. It's just the little misfires and misconnects that we have sometimes when we're dealing with tricky stuff.
Yes, absolutely. So I'm curious to know, how is it you came upon this piece?
Well, I've known Annie Kaufman, the director, for a really long time, longer than you've probably seen me in theater. I've been around for 20 years, and so has she. And so we know all the same people. We like each other, but we've never actually sealed the deal and worked together. So she actually called me in to audition for this play. And, you know, I had heard of Amy Herzog's work before. I think the most recent thing I had heard of was 4,000 Miles, and it seemed like something that I would like, my kind of sensibility, just a very thoughtful, nuanced work. And I didn't get a chance to see that production, but I read this play, and it was just so keenly observed about human behavior and, you know, just the nuances in conversation, the nuances in shifts in tone and like attitude. And so there's nothing that beats you over the head or is heavy-handed. And I just really love that kind of work. And so the two scenes I auditioned for, I play two roles. So I don't wear that many hats in this show. I wear nurse hat and then I wear a doctor hat. And you know, those scenes, you just get a really great contrast as an actor of like someone who's really warm and casual and has this friendship with Mary Jane, the mom in question, the title character. And then you get her pediatric intensivist when it's not a spoiler, but the second half of the play takes place in a clinical setting. And you see the more kind of stoic intellectual exchange with this doctor talking about important medical stuff and just where the human is in those interactions and where the professionalism is in a casual interaction and just how different caring for a kid at home is versus caring for them in a hospital and how hospitals can be these like they're caring for humans who need help, but not always treating them like humans. And so I just thought that was so, I just think the play is so smart. And I learn from it every night.
I love that. And I want to snowball off of that if I could and ask, what was it like developing this piece?
Well, we had a wealth of resources. I mean, you know, the two characters I play, I met their real corollaries. We met a head of pediatric ICU doctor, and she came and talked to us. We met a home health nurse who came and talked to us, who had lived with this family for years and has these relationships with all these different families. And some of the kids she's watched, you know, like grow up and go to college, you know, even with, you know, physical health challenges, you know, she stays in touch with these families. And there's a music therapist in that's a character in the play. A music therapist came to speak with us. You know, we've had a hospital chaplain come speak to us. So it was really like all the resources we could want. I was working with medical equipment as soon as we got on our feet in the rehearsal room. We had the wealth of knowledge of the playwright who is writing this from a personal experience, who was constantly in the room and very generous with our time. And then what we learned throughout the process was there were other people who had experiences of caring for kids with special needs and, you know, people in general with different medical emergencies and were able to tell us this is how you handle this situation. So it was just all the resources you could possibly want to make something like this come across in a real tangible way.
That is amazing. Those must have been some intense conversations with these wonderful people. Wow.
Yeah, a lot of crying.
We've been talking about the power of this piece. What is the message or thought you're hoping the audiences take away from the show?
I was thinking about questions like this because this does come up a lot. I mean, any show you do, it's like, what do you want audiences to take away from it? And I'm always like, do whatever you want, you know, like come see it and just be open and experience it. But I think with this piece, I hope that the little boy that we're talking about feels alive and real and known and seen to people, even though he's mostly an offstage character, because I think if you're not living this experience or you haven't dealt with like someone with chronic illness or having that in your family or in your home, then it seems like, oh, that's intense. I wanna, you know, watch anything else or think about anything else in my spare time. And I think what this play does is invites you to spend some time with like a situation that seems hard from the outside and just to discover the beauty in the lives of these folks and the beauty in anyone that you may see. Like these kids are funny. These kids don't always behave. These kids have sass and personality. And, you know, you might not, if you see a kid at a doctor's office or, you know, on the train or something, you might not get the full experience of who they are, their humanity. And I hope that because, Rachel McAdams, who is a beautiful Mary Jane, she makes me see the love for this kid in a way that's just, beautiful and moving, like every single performance. And that's what I want people to get, I guess.
That is so wonderful. I love that thought. And that is coming through 10 times. Like, that is so spot on with what I feel. At least I took away from the show. So I love that. Final question for this first part is, who do you hope have access to Mary Jane?
I would love for caregivers to get to see it. I would love for folks who live with disabilities, kids who live with disabilities, folks who take care of folks who have disabilities to have access to this. And we did have a caregivers night the other night, and I got to meet a lot of healthcare professionals who said, "Thank you for telling this story. I see myself up there as a caregiver. You're representing us, and that's just exactly how it is. The relationship seems so clear and relatable and believable to me." So that felt really great to hear and to meet those people who, they just don't get paid enough and they aren't valued enough. And what they do, like the kind of like adulting you have to do on like a second to second basis is just really humbling to me. So, we know that theater is cost prohibitive in a lot of ways. And I know that MTC has made some gestures and opportunities to make it more accessible for people. And that's been really important because, and not to say that this is only a economic issue, because of course we know there are people who are, can afford a theater ticket, but also deal with disabilities. So, that's the thing about our bodies, like everybody has one. And, you can throw a certain amount of money at it and still face a lot of challenges. But, as far as access, finances are always the barrier. So I hope that more people who, wouldn't normally think of spending money on a Broadway show would feel welcome and able to come to see this.
For the second part of our interview, we love giving our listeners the chance to get to know our guests a little bit better. Pull the curtain back, if you will. And I want to start by asking you, what or who inspires you? What playwrights, composers, or shows have inspired you in the past, or are just some of your favorites?
Well, playwrights, I will always shout out Kirsten Grinnage. She's this wonderful playwright based in Boston. She writes largely about African American middle class, but across like intersectional across like class. So she writes about Black people and class in a way that I don't see a lot, and the microaggressions among Black people. So it's not just like racism is bad. It's like, I'm a wealthy Black woman and I have a nanny who's Black, but I also have a housekeeper who is Caribbean. So I don't know if she's appropriate to teach my toddler because I don't want my toddler to have an accent. It's just like, you can't get more granular and subtle. And I'm hugely inspired by people who write like that. As a visual artist, Isaac Julian, who's a Black British installationist, he does a lot of videography And he particularly is interested in queerness and I guess also class in an interesting way. He did this beautiful video installation around Frederick Douglass and just the color saturation of the reds and this beautiful man playing Frederick Douglass. That's visually inspiring to me. I like the line drawings of Arthur Rackham, children's illustrator, British children's illustrator, not black. I just like the drawings. I love the romantic composers, Debussy, Satie, Ravel. I'm just kind of free associating, but that's David Bowie, huge, huge David Bowie fan. Roxy Music, glam rock, all of that. Yeah, a lot of different, my own very particular aesthetics mapped onto me that I like.
I love those. That is a brilliant list. That is fantastic. Building on that list, I would love to know, what is your favorite part about working in the theater?
My favorite part about working in the theater is just how immediate it is, and you can only experience the moment once and now. And now, it's happening, it's going away. Here comes more. Let that go. Stay in the present. They have this reaction. Okay, how does that change? Is this something I can keep that kind of worked? Let's save that. Let me try it again. Nope, didn't land. Different person, different audience tonight. I'm different. I'm coming in with different energy. My scene partner's different. It's just so, if you ever feel like you take being alive for granted, or you take the present for granted, just go get on the stage and you'll be very aware that you are alive and you are in this time period. And it's like 7:30 and there's nothing else you can do but be there. I mean, the only other thing I can compare it to is like when I gave birth. I was like, do I have to do it though? Can someone else do it? No, you have to do it, and you have to do it now. You have to get a baby out of your body. You do it. Go do it right now. It's unavoidable, and that's how theater is. And there's nothing like it.
That is a brilliant answer. I've never heard an answer like that. So I love that. So well put. And it now leads to my favorite question to ask guests. And that, of course, is, what is your favorite theater memory?
Okay, I have one. David Adjmi, brilliant playwright, Chef's Kiss, Stereophonic, go see it, it's wonderful. But let me tell you, my favorite moment in the theater was a production of his Marie Antoinette at Yale Rep. And, just no expense spared. You would think this was a Broadway production. Like there's a tableau of her court with all these opulent costumes at this huge banquet table and, the wigs up, to the heavens. So you just have a moment to take this in with like the sumptuous feast and all the flowers and the visuals. And then at the end of the scene, the wigs fly up and off their heads. So that's one thing. You're not expecting that. And then they have like another wig under that. So already I'm gagging, as the children say. And then there's another moment where it all starts to go away and the revolution is coming. And so, she's kind of there by herself and, she's kind of been stripped of her, fine clothing, and she's in like a corset and a skirt or something. And how I experienced it was like the curtain is about to fall, like, of a stage, like the curtain down. So, but like halfway through the curtain coming down, it atomizes and pixelates because it's dirt. It was a curtain of dirt. I did not know it was dirt. I thought it was fabric until it started to pixelate before my eyes. Like CGI could never. Like this was happening. Like the trompe de l'oeil of that. My gosh. That was astounding. Trompe l'oeil. That's what it is. But that blew my freaking mind, and it always will. And I haven't seen anything that has surprised me more in a theater since that.
Oh my gosh, that sounds amazing. As we wrap things up, I would love to know, are there any other projects or productions that you have coming down the pipeline that we might be able to plug for you?
There's some stuff in the works. What I can say is I'm going to be working on this film in Montana that is about, it's called Clara Boone, and it is about the only documented case where a ghost was a witness in their own murder. So it's historical, it's on the books. This woman, I think in the historical version, the mother has a dream about her daughter where her daughter says, "This is who killed me." In our film, it's a little different, like the ghost, you know, appears and tells her story to another woman. But I play Sarah Bickford, who is also a historical figure, a free Black woman, and because this takes place in the 1850s, I believe, a free Black woman in Montana who is the owner of the water company. And so like a Black businesswoman, and who is a friend of the woman who encounters the murdered lady. So that is in the works, and that's going to be something that I'll be working on in the fall. And also, this is the 10th anniversary of Scaffold Room, this performance piece I did with Ralph Lemon and Okwi Okpakwasili. So we'll be doing a concert version of that performance piece at the Kitchen, I believe, in November. So that's what I can say so far, and we'll see.
That all sounds amazing, especially that film. Oh my gosh, I can't wait to see that.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to spend some time in Montana. I've never been.
Well, that leads to my final question, which is if our listeners would like more information about Mary Jane or about you, maybe they'd like to reach out to you. How can they do so?
Mary Jane, you want to go to mtc.org, Manhattan Theater Club, and that will give you all the Mary Jane stuff. And they are also on Instagram. I think it's like MTC_NYC, but you can find them. And me, I'm April Mathis. 2 T's, M-A-T-T-H-I-S. I'm on Instagram. I put stuff there about what I'm doing, and that's good enough.
I love it. Well, April, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. Truly, this has been such an honor. As I mentioned, I've loved everything you've been doing. I can't wait to see what you do next. I'm really jazzed about this film, and I can't wait to see the next stage thing you do as well. But thank you today for just speaking about this incredible work you're currently in, and thank you for your time. So,
thank you so much. It was so great to meet you and talk to you.
Thank you. My guest today has been the incredible actress April Mathis. She is currently in the Manhattan Theater Club's presentation of Mary Jane, which is playing now through June 16th at the Samuel J. Friedman Theater. You can get your tickets and more information by visiting telecharge.com. And we also have some contact information for our guests and for the show, which will be posted in our episode description, as well as on our social media posts. But truly, run, don't walk. Get your tickets now. The show is going to continue to sell out. It is amazing. You are not going to want to miss this. It is an absolutely groundbreaking show. And April is giving an incredible performance. You will love it. Again, the show is Mary Jane, now through June 16th. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies, and keep talking about the theater.
In a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.
Where I don't care.